Just be intentional. Be intentional. The world is replete with opportunities.
You are now listening to the podcast where authors inspire listeners to become authors, the Going North Podcast. I'm your host, certified self-leadership trainer, best-selling author, and book enthusiast, Dom Brightman. And you're going to be listening to a different author that will inspire you to join the business of immortality, known as authorship. Now let the fun begin. Attention, attention, attention! You're tuning into the Going North Podcast, and today's special sponsor is the Going North Podcast Advancement Shop, baby. That's right indeed, because we got some brand new hats now to add to the collection. So that's right, folks, we got some Going North Podcast hats, some Advance Others to Advance Yourself hats, and a few other designs. So head over to the goingnorthpodcast.com shop, pick up a hat or two. And today on the highlight reel, builder for authors known as the Going North Podcast, we got another super special awesome human for you today, my friends. That's right indeed, you're going to be in for a treat that's good enough to eat five times over indeed, because we got a U.S. veteran in the house, y'all. That's right indeed, another brave warrior, and not only a brave warrior, but a brave warrior who's also retired from the wonderful, the great U.S. Navy as well. He was a U.S. Navy captain on top of that. And on top of that, now he's a keynote speaker, high performance leadership coach, and the founder, y'all. He found something. He is the founder and president of Sixth Gear Consulting LLCs. Let's give it up for the good doc himself, the amazing and stupendous Dr. Anthony Simmons. How are you doing today, Dr. Anthony?
Oh, just fine there. Thank you. How are you doing there, Dom?
Oh, doing great. Doing great. It's great to have a wonderful serviceman who put his life on the line to serve the great U.S. of A. on the podcast. Always got honor to the veterans.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, it was my honor to serve, and I'm was fortunate to have that opportunity to work in that capacity.
Oh, yeah, that's right indeed. It was it 28 years, if I'm not mistaken?
That's correct. 28 awesome years.
Well, there you go. There you go indeed. Made out on the other side, did the good time, and now you get to do something else. My goodness, what was it like being in the Navy and being a captain?
Actually, it was great. It was an opportunity, really, that tied right into my innate leadership, starting from being a high school quarterback and a point guard, you know, and just elevating to that stage and getting a chance to influence people and serve people. And that was the beauty of it. It was an honor more so than anything, just having that opportunity to make people around me better.
That's what I'm talking about indeed. So was that something you always wanted to do, to go into the military after being a QB in high school?
No, not at all. It's pretty interesting you go there, because I was just got inducted to the Austin Peay Governor's Military Hall of Fame. I was the 19th inductee, and it was a second year for that process. And one of the gentlemen that was inducted was Ted Crozier Jr. He was actually receiving on behalf of his dad, Ted Crozier Sr., who happened to be the mayor of Clarksville, Tennessee, when I was at Austin Peay State University. And Ted Crozier Jr. was over the ROTC unit there. And he asked me at the ceremonies, how did we miss you from Army ROTC? I said, well, they recruited me. But I said, I had a couple of teammates that went out for it, but I said, I had no interest in the military at that time. And he was like, okay, so that's fair enough. So actually, I finished college. I was studying engineering there, and I realized from being a collegiate athlete, you don't do interns, and you have no work experience. So all that education, it pretty much just goes nowhere with no experience there, especially as an engineering field. So I was encouraged, hey, once you go out and do the military for a few years and get some more background, get some leadership experience, get some work experience, and it'll set you up for life as an engineer, you know, with that experience. And went out to Officer Candidate School and just realized all the opportunities there, and then how much the Navy really aligned with my vision. So it was sort of, I call it blind luck, but people quick to correct me and say, no, you were destined. So I guess it was my destiny to serve in the Navy.
Yeah, I guess that's the nice way of saying no escape.
No escape, no escape. I'm beginning to think more and more every day we end up in the places that was meant for us to be, especially when it comes to leadership. And I say that because I just started a job working as a bridge resource management instructor, and it sort of helps tie into some of the leadership challenges we have now out there in the merchant fleet. So you have to have those qualifications as a captain to do that. So once again, I'm back in my element again. So still leading in that capacity.
Oh wow, okay. Oh, that's huge right there. It's right in days, right in date. It's always good when past experience pays off for new endeavors.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I guess indeed. If I'm not mistaken, actually, even before having the official leadership degree, you actually got a bachelor's in robotics, right?
I sure do have a bachelor's in robotics, and that's always interesting because I talk with some people that's working in the automobile industry. As you know, America's replete by automobile industry now with, Mercedes-Benz, Hyundai, and Kia all moving here stateside. And I always talk to people about how they mix and mingle the people and the robotics. And I go into the artificial intelligence and doing strategic planning and analysis and saying, well, we still got to have human in the loop. So that's just tie the leadership piece in with the artificial intelligence. The robots was initially envisioned to replace what we call the 3 Ds, dirty, dull, and danger processes out there. But I was just listening to Elon Musk work, and he was like, well, this robot thing is very interesting. There's some tasks that are so simple, it just doesn't make sense for the human not to do it, i.e., putting the windowsill inside of a car. He says, just we tried that with robots, it just didn't make sense. So I need the humans. So I talk with these people that work in the automobile industry. I said, they said, we got to wait for the robots, make sure they're working. If they don't go down, we're going to be able to produce so many cars. I said, so what's the division of labor there? So I still stay in the know there to some extent. It's just interesting. It was 1985 through 89. I studied robotics, and they're not too far removed from the vision they had then, for as them and the human being interacting together.
Oh, so what got you to robotics? That's an interesting field and actually a rarity for this show, actually.
Yes, I was also be I always wanted to be an engineer, electric engineer when I was coming along through high school, and I got to Austin PE. They had engine, electronic engineering technology with an emphasis in robotics. So I just want to get as close to high tech engineering as I possibly could. So I took advantage of that opportunity there. It tied in with all the controls and what have you to robotic field. I thought it would, looking at being a visionary and opportunities on the horizon, I thought it would set me apart. So I said, why not do robotics? You got to take that less traveled path sometime, in order to find that treasure that everyone else dared to go for. So that was the genesis of my studying robotics.
Oh, beautiful indeed, beautiful indeed. And how has it changed over the years since you basically got an early start of what folks get to see nowadays, the regular folks get to see?
Trial and error. It's pretty interesting. I think robotics itself, the concept, I don't really think it has really evolved that much. You probably get more application in stuff like surgeries, which umbilical cords, this and that, and other. I went to Navy postgraduate school from 95 through 99. I did mechanical engineering. I did my thesis in controls, and I worked with a lot of remote vehicles and modeling different waves, and I had some other instructors and some friends that was there that was involved with the different umbilicals and this and that. So you probably got more breakthrough in the medical field than you do in the automobile industry from or it's the behavior of robots.
Okay, that's what I'm talking about indeed. So I guess the foundational principles stay the same. It's just what's used in the technology and how far it grows, I guess.
Exactly, yes, the application for sure.
So I'm talking about indeed. And I guess you have so many wide interests because you joined the business of immortality with your wonderful book, your fabulous book, Championing Organizational Wellness. So my goodness, what led you to put pen to paper and put that book out there for the world to devour and apply to their lives.
The title itself is hopefully it's all encompassing. It really boils down to, we talked about 28 years of military experience, we talked leadership, and what I'm really passionate about. And I see this process where it ties into interorganizational relationships, just championing people. And as my book is laid out, I said, what's better to do than to take 20 years of experience where I operated in seven different ships? I moved around through different home ports, which is somewhat uncommon, and people sort of get fixated in certain areas. But I worked out on the East Coast. I went to San Diego. I went over to Hawaii. Then I ended up in Japan. So I navigated over 63 different countries, where some ports I visited more than once. So I had repeated visits to those countries. And just watching America more so, how we have so many challenges with diversity initiatives. I watched the ebb and flow in the Navy. I look at the 70s. We had Admiral Zumwalt came in and put pieces in place to, to improve on the diversity initiatives. And I watched, we had Admiral Mike Mullen. He was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, and also he was the chief of naval operations. He was a really, really big advocate for people working together in diverse environments. In fact, he was one of my mentors. I met him when I was a lieutenant at the Naval Graduate School. He was the 06 at the time, which was a captain. And I was fortunate. It was a surface Navy. I was a surface warfare officer. I was a surface Navy dinner we had there, and I happened to get lucky enough to, to set the table with him. And we just had a conversation. He was from Hollywood. His dad, he was a son of a publicist. He graduated from the Naval Academy in 1968. And one of his best friends happened to be one of the first Black astronauts, which I would name escapes me right now, which is unfortunate, but they went to the Naval Academy together. Now, my mother was just real different. And throughout those years, every time I would see him, he always remembered the conversation we had. One of his questions was, how did you manage to do so well as a collegiate athlete, and do academics, et cetera, et cetera? So he sort of focused on that. And I would just see him throughout my career, and he just never forgot the conversations. And he just always advocated, not just for me, he did right by a lot of people that was diverse cultures. And he continued that throughout his time in the Navy, and also as the Joint Staff. If you look at the Joint Staff when he was there, it was really, really one of the most diverse it's ever been in his era there. And I think that was 2009, 10 time frame when I was in the Pentagon with him. So you look at this, you look at people like Admiral Mullen. You see these initiatives don't sustain themselves. We ebb and flow. All right. Fast forward 3, 4 years later, there was pictures of the Joint Staff, and that was zero, diversity officers on the staff there. That's how that happened so quickly. And I was a part of the initiative that I worked human resources also when I was ashore, and I had some opportunities to sort of champion some of the career paths of some of the officers, make sure they got in positions to make them viable. And there were some pieces like I don't. One reason we don't sustain this is because we don't put people in the right job. And that goes back to one of my concepts is how do you get success? It's where preparation opportunity meets. Okay. Preparation is up to you. That's internal. You got to do that on your own. But the opportunity, that's with the organization you're with. That's an external. You have no control over that. They got to set you up, put you in the right job. So Admiral Mullen had this initiative where he was ensuring that people was getting the right jobs and getting into positions, whether or not they were just knee-jerk getting promoted because we need to fill quotas. We're going to get qualified people that are going to have a life cycle, of achievement, so they can actually be viable in those fields. So watching those initiatives, looking at the Navy, asking me how was it to be a captain, it was really the process of going to be a captain. You notice I mentioned earlier that I was just going to join the Navy 3, 4 years and get some experience. But I was on the USS Gettysburg, cruiser, and down in Jacksonville, Florida, where Mayport was like, that's the name of the base. And I just saw some of the differences that was taking place with the officers. I don't want to get too involved and too detailed, but I just saw the need for me as an African American to be there to support and advocate for people that look like me. And also, for that matter, I was always responsible for everyone, but that was a special requirement, the mentor and champion the careers of people that, that had more in common with me, that it wasn't quite looked at in a what I would say, objective manner. So you tie all that in, and then this whole champion organization wellness, if you go through the process of the book, it's taken those 20 years of experience going through 63 countries. And what we do as a Navy, the Navy is a real diplomacy operation. Go back to the sail of the Great White Fleet. Yeah, we go out, we meet countries, we engage countries, we understand their cultures, ingratiate ourselves, make sure there's alignment. So you look in America, we have all these micro cultures that we don't even appreciate, the cultures. We all grade it, and evaluate it based on, the majority culture. And you can't ever get it right. You have to know how to meet people halfway. So I go into my initial part of the book and talk about self-assess and understand who you really are. What's your personality type? What drives you? You got to fix your position in order to help other people. So then I go into part two is navigating blind spots, the alt person versus the won't self. We all get tied up into the won't self, tied into our ethnicity, our culture, our beliefs, our social values, and we fail to recognize those are other people. So we get those blind spots. So we don't do right by people. We got in-group, out-group favoritism. So things I experienced in the Navy just resonated. I want to share that story. I want to connect people. I want to sustain those initiatives where people can do better, by connecting with each other. What halfway is not always the same for everyone. Sometimes it depends on social economics, cultural background, et cetera, et cetera. So then my ch next chapter goes into a coaching conversation to enable people to link and connect each other and appreciate each other and understand who they are, what they need to move in lockstep in order to go what I like to say true north. That's why I like the title here. We do have that in common. So that's the genesis of my book there. Just some things I saw and wanted to sustain those initiatives so we can all work together and do better as a people.
Amen to that, amen to that, and so much to unpack there indeed. That's right indeed. Especially with the favoritism piece, it's gonna be just about anywhere you go. It's like on face value, it's like, oh yeah, we're gonna try to be fair to everybody, but it's like at the same time, especially as a leader, I can't be doing that. He's just
I
said the
know.
done, but
I
yeah,
know.
here comes the territory.
And we can only help a few, though. You can't, it only is going to impact some of you. And if I can impact, one out of 100 or one out of 1,000, I mean, that's progress, right? Some people got cognitive dissonance, they just feel like I'm going to support who I'm more comfortable with. I feel my book, if you read through that, it does talk about the favoritism piece and how it happened, how I experienced it. We just got to get comfortable being uncomfortable. And we have to use terms that have positive connotation. That's why, like look at DEI, they look at diversity, equity, inclusion. I go back, I was just reading a book that was focusing on the synergies between Booker T. Washington and Theodore Roosevelt. We had the same issue with equality, back at the end of the 20th century. So people just don't like the word equality for some reason. I don't understand that. And you go back to Reconstruction and the whole piece. So I said, okay, maybe we should use the words, terms that's probably a little more friendly, conducive to just this just make opportunities, where favorable for everyone. So I looked at the connectedness of people, just appreciating each other, communicating, and garnering trust. So that was one of the other initiatives I put that I've tied in as I go out and do some of my keynote speaking and doing seminars.
There you go indeed. There you go indeed. And I guess there's a bit of a change agent piece with putting those initiatives out there. Probably dealing with folks like hearing the word equality. It's like, dude, how are you gonna get mad at hearing that?
Yes.
Then again, people can be extra weird these days.
Well, if you look at chapter 8 in my book, those are the tools. It's really organizational wellness is the book, but it's the confluence of organization development and sustainment. Oftentimes, we got these initiatives that short-lived, but the sustainment piece is you look at intermediate performance reviews. We evaluate people now like annually, right? Most organizations spending most of their time now replacing the employees because they don't even know the employees. They don't talk to people, not transparent. So I had some initiatives I would do, not only cross-functional. I had back then it was a mentorship program in the ships I commanded. I always felt that, I would always tell sailors that, we are different. We come from different backgrounds, but we're in the same place now. We left those backgrounds, but we had a bigger vision. We wanted to do something together. We all have some of the same goals, and so we're gonna work together in that regard. So if I had officers and even sailors that came from areas where I didn't have certain exposure, I was hands-on with how I align mentors, and I call it my coach protege model now. And so I wanted people to understand each other. If I had a guy that went to someone went to a historically Black college and university that hasn't had much exposure, to the other cultures, and by vice versa, someone that went to like a Holy Cross, for instance, that didn't have much exposure to that, I crossed them over. I mean, I let them, they was became mentor mentees. That way we get to know each other. We have some responsibility for each other. When I did performance reviews, I bring your mentor in with you. We're gonna sit down and talk. That was during my mid, phase in review when it was didn't count. We just want to see where everyone was. There was no surprises. I just don't like when you're in an organization where when it comes time for evaluation, everyone is surprised and it's the first time someone tell you suck. That's not how the game is played,
Right.
So I put some pieces in place and I talked to those concepts in my book there. And those accountability tools, the worst thing that ever happened is you asked me earlier how it feel to be a captain. But that's a lot of responsibilities of being a captain. You have to be held accountable. Some people get in positions and they feel like they got all the power in the world and do what they want to do. It's not about power, it's about responsibility, to people. I always have my four pillars I use from the time I was a department head. I was a chief engineer on board one of the destroyers in Norfolk. And always had a responsibility, accountability, loyalty, and trust. And as a responsibility, yes, you go and you're responsible to the person you work for. That's obvious. That's a one-way situation. You have to do that. And I said, opposite of that is accountability. And you're also accountable for answering the mail, but also you have to hold those leaders accountable also to make sure they set you up for success. So those is one directional, from junior to senior, senior to junior. I mean, so one was bi-directional accountability. Then the other two pieces I had was loyalty. And that's where when you're in a leadership position as a captain, it makes sure you have to set your guys up, you have to do right by them. And the last piece was trust. Oftentimes you hear someone say, "I just don't trust that guy to do this and do that." Well, does he trust you, as his leader? So that's a bi-directional. So I always had that those four pillars where I thought responsibility and loyalty was one way, junior to senior down, and then accountability and trust, but bi-directional. And those concepts worked pretty well for me over the course of those. I adopted it in 1998, so they worked well for me over the course of 20 years.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about indeed. So, what was the most challenging book part about putting your book together with all that knowledge and intel you gained over the years?
I tell you, academia, going through the process of I went through Regent University and just having good instructors there, and they worked. When you go to a higher education, with my position and my experience, I have a lot of people say, "Well, just go out there and get a." When they go through a school, that's it's a pump, just get you through, and you get the papers. And but if you go to Regent, they're gonna work you pretty hard, and you really if you want to do that at this stage in your life. I said, "Well, I want to learn. I want to do it right." And as we went through the process, the way they build the course, you pretty much have all your material in place. Then you have to have your advisor or someone to pretty much help you channel it and teach you how to bring the book together. So it's essentially you just they say, "Just look, if you got a 12-chapter book, you take 12 different projects, these 20, 25 page papers you write, and just make sure they link and connect and and a tie in, to a common theme." So that approach really made it a lot smoother and tenable, but it was still a lot of work. It was the process was 3 years, and I knew within a year into the program that I was probably gonna embark on doing a manuscript there. And as I got into my specialty leadership coaching and started time out experience, and it really helped me to formalize, what I've done and to tie the academic piece into it, which works really well for me because there's a lot of skepticism now between the business sector and academia. So for me to have to be able to tie academics into experience, I think it really has afforded me a valuable product out there to really make a difference, in the business and sector, as well as education, defense sector, in various fields. So
That's what I'm talking about days. I'm talking about the day. Yeah, because all that wonderful work you were doing, get the magical doctor screen and probably just separating all the work and making sure it all linked up. It's like, all right, cool. It's a challenge, but hey, it's gonna be worth it when it's all said and done. My man finally did it. So do you think you're gonna take on another book project in the future?
Yes, I am. I actually started a book before this one. This is pretty much an academia slash self-help book. I really, being from a little small town, Goodwood, Alabama, I grew up with around 3,000 people there, which now is probably less than half of that. Life, things sort of depreciates or decays to some extent in these smaller towns where, the businesses, the revenue is it's no longer there. But anyways, I'm from a town called Goodwater, Alabama, and I'm writing this book called Leading People to Good Waters. And thing of Goodwater, we had a really strong working class community when I came through. And I would like to say that I went through a school that had integrated few years before my time there. My high school principal was also educated my parents, and he was relegated to the principalship at the elementary school at the onset after integration. But eventually he went through a legal process in order to get the principalship once the incumbent retired, and he became principal. Back then, we had our middle schools and high schools tied together. So one time I or junior high and high school. So when I got into that school, that's what they call them, junior high and high. 6 through 9 was junior high, and I think 10 through 12 was high school. So I had him throughout my entire school career there, and so I got this approach, this whole concept is going back, telling people how did I got to how did how did I achieve the things I did, and it all goes back to those formative years in Goodwater. So the book is called Leading People to Good Waters. So I'm probably about. Probably about a couple of years away from, realizing the entire vision. It's going to go through a chronological process, the formative years as a high school quarterback, all-state football player. Also, I was fortunate enough to become, valedictorian due to some of the mentoring and the approach that was done with athletics and academics there, and then tie that into being a collegiate athlete who actually understood the concept of playing college ball and education. So it's and tied and then moving forward in the Navy, which you just don't become a captain by going from one assignment to the next. This has a lot to do with that underpinning your approach and taking on your tough assignments, and also doing the pieces I mentioned earlier, the preparation and having people to champion your career for is putting you in a getting you the right job opportunity. So I just think that's a story that would should serve me well, and also it's a reality to scaling those ranks in the Navy. I've had some challenges throughout every process that where I have some extra activity to happen in order to get my due. So I think all those stories need to be shared with the people that's coming through the ranks over the years, especially those people that may come from minority groups, because of some of the not necessarily so much favoritism. Sometimes it's just it gets to the point sometimes where people just don't, they have other people they want to champion, and you're not on that list. So, and you have to figure out how to make that happen. And then some people don't expect you to be the person that willing and want to do what it takes to move to the next rank. So they think you're discontent. I always tell people it's okay to get in the room, but it ain't, get into the house, but you got to, once you're in, you got to want to maneuver around and explore the entire building by just being comfortable being in the room. So I was that guy who wanted to explore all the opportunities that the Navy offered, and I had to do some special maneuvering for that to happen. I just want to share that story and also let people know you come from small towns like Goodwater and still have the same opportunities that everyone else has if you just, if you pay your dues and take on the tough assignments and continue to grow.
Continue to grow with deeds. That's what I'm talking about. Deed. So sounds like you're gonna be leading them to water and to get to drinking.
I like that one. That's great.
Yes,
I see at
indeed.
the Maxwell School that they must teach you guys how to really, really keep things light there, huh? Oh, that's just your personality. Which one is it?
Probably more personality than anything else.
Well, that's outstanding, though. You know, I just, I I have to sometimes wound down, from my days as being locked on as a military guy. But I'm sort of enjoying it. I'm getting there. That's why it's good to engage people like yourself there. It's just valuable for me.
Valuable indeed. And speaking of valuable, I'm pretty sure you probably have some setbacks along the way that actually set you up for success. So, what would you consider your biggest setback that actually set you up for success?
I went to Region for a reason. It's a Christian-based institution there, and I felt that I needed to get closer in that regard to principle. The biggest book on leadership is the Bible. And one thing I learned is the good Lord doesn't leave his call, his chosen people, behind idiots. Okay, I always would like to say that. And I say that we all end up in the places we're supposed to be in life. And there are some things where sometimes we can overcompensate, overanalyze stuff based on environments and situations. And I didn't, I had some challenges, and during my, final out in the Navy, but I saw it's probably the best thing I ever experienced. This is a piece called Speed of Trust. When there's no trust, decisions break down. You don't always use your best judgment on how you do things. Sometimes you respond to how you think people would, try to avoid stereotypes and what have you, and you have missteps. So I had a situation that I experienced was probably one of the best out of my life, and I learned the importance of trust. Speed of trust is just that. You have to have it. If you don't have it, you're not going to sustain yourself because you're going to start acting out of character. And just being surrounded by people that bring it full circle. Say, I walked on eggshells for probably my last 10 years in the Navy just because of, the things I was doing and some of the misalignments there and misperceptions and what have you. But and at the end of the day, I felt like I was able to regain the real soul of who Anthony Simmons is in the aftermath of those experiences. And I always tell people, you have to you learn and just make you stronger, in those environments. So that was probably one of the, and I have no problem sharing it. If you look at the concept of a movie, you got the protagonist, and then you go through this stage where you got the antagonist that's going to have that adverse impact. A lot of people like to deny that. But if you deny that, then you're not going to have a happy ending because you're going to sort of, lose sight of, the things that went wrong in that regard. And that's why these movies go to these highs and then they spin out, at the end there based on that antagonistic moment. So that's how I like to frame that scenario.
There you go. Probably a golden frame too. That's what I'm talking about. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. So, since you're a fellow child of the king, how does faith play a role in your business?
Servant, you've been a servant leader, putting the interests of others beyond that of self. And I coined this term called servantship, by servant leadership. Leadership is standing out front per se. I thought it was a somewhat of a paradoxical term. So I termed, servantship and just really the desire to put the best interest of others before that of self. And as I talked about the sectors that I wanted to impact, we look across the board here. We look at going back to the days of King, how I was able to realize so much success through the churches. But unfortunately, churches became all a business and had a lot of the preaching for profit type, scenarios here and there. Then everyone just started, jumping in with that. Sometimes I don't like to judge people, but you have to look at the underpinnings. Sometimes, I like to use this piece I call upside down leadership, which I think is spinning out of control. You go back to Maslow hierarchy of needs. You got these different curves you go through in life. You have this first stage where you get this sense of you need security and what have you. And then once you get all these different needs, your basic life needs, then you go to your progression. That's actualization. So some people never get beyond that security stage where they go into the progressive side of the needs curve. And you haven't had actualization. Sometimes you actualize to other people, and then sometimes we actualize to people not strong enough to uphold us because they need help. So then that's why I call leadership being upside down at times. And I think by me grounding myself on the biblical sense and understanding scripture and exegetical, analysis, it really helped me to better, speak and engage people from that in that regard, and also learn more about myself. Like I look at my Roman chapter 12. Strengths, one is to teach, so that's just tell me that's your natural gift, and that aligns with my Clifton top five strength finders, which is a learner, intellection, focus, and responsible, and teach type. So it's just amazing sometimes how we have these God-given gifts that we don't realize, and no matter how you walk in, eventually it's going to bring you back. And it was not until I started embracing what my calling was that I began to have, the right success, embarked on the path that was meant for me. And that's another reason I feel that, going through this doctoral scholarship, my goal in life was not in life, but as I got in the Navy and was having a lot of success over the years and made captain, I felt that I was going to be do a couple more promotions in the Navy just based on how, trajectory of my career. But it didn't happen for a reason, because it was a path for me to come here and ground myself in my faith and bring more the whole person into the process.
There you go. The whole person to the process of days. I'm talking about date. Yeah, definitely important right there. Knowing your strengths and definitely focusing on making the best possible indeed. That's right, indeed. Definitely good for you. Definitely good for you indeed. So my goodness. So fun question for you. Well, actually, before that one, since you're going on a bit of an interview tour, is there a question that you wish folks would ask you more often when you're being interviewed?
Yes, I think what how did I get around? What made me, the person I am today? Yes. And how and that tied and another tied into that with all the the experiences I've had, why do I still strive equally hard? So those are the two, the effort, and why am I still just equally driven?
Yeah, there you go. That's right indeed. I'm guessing that goes back to the good old Romans 12, I'm assuming.
Yeah, it's been a learner. One piece to say, what made me the Anthony I am. I know you asked someone that question one time, and I thought about that question, thought it was a great question. And I thought real strongly, because it is a thought-provoking question. How did you get to where you are? And that's a trial and error and continuous growth through filtering out, the damaged goods or the negative behavior, unfavorables. You have to self-assess. One of my favorite songs is Michael Jackson, Man in the Mirror. Okay. We point that finger, man, but we forget that thumb is like just looking right at us. So take a look at that thumb sometime. And you have to continue to filter out. You have to go through training, continuously learn, formally, informally. You have to stay with the practical aspects. I'm reading a lot about diversity, diverse generation, not diversity, but diverse generations. We got four generations in the workforce today, generation the baby boomers, you got Generation X, you got millennials, and you got the Z generation. Understand them. We don't just take for granted that our generation was the best. And if you study that, my Generation X has a lot of alignment with Generation Z. And also the baby boomer has an alignment with the millennials. The world has changed from a virtual standpoint, from artificial intelligence. So people get more exposure. Actually, they grow a lot more from that, but they just don't want to be lectured to. They're more independent in some ways. In some ways, they still require help in mentoring, but they don't want you to be lectured to them. They just want you to like lead by example. So I learned that. And so that's what really drives me, because stuff changes, the environment has changed. So you got to stay, in order to stay relevant, you got to continue to work hard. That's why I stay hungry, because I have to stay hungry to make a difference, across multiple generations. And in order to do it, I have to self-assess, and I have to continue to grow, and I have to be willing to learn from everybody, even the younger generation. I learn from my kids every day, and as well as I continue to engage the older generation as well. So that's, I think, the thing that makes me continue to be who I am. It's just that willingness to self-assess and continue to grow.
There we go. So I'm talking about indeed. Talking about indeed. Never even heard the even thought about the comparison between Gen X and Gen Z because it's like, hey, kind of like the rebels of the bunch in a way.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's some real subtle pieces there, but yeah, there's always some slight differences. And I
Oh,
learned
yeah.
that from reading it that, I guess they call us the turnkey generation, the latch, whatever, lock generation X. I think we had our more challenges than I realized also in that generation. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, latchkey kids.
Yeah, that's it, latchkey. You wouldn't
Yes,
be that
indeed.
generation, would you?
No, I'm a millennial.
Okay. So yeah, great.
Yes, indeed. So I got to see and use a rotary phone and actually know what it is.
Oh,
Since
that's
I had
outstanding.
parents.
So you may be a you're a hybrid
Yep, like
then.
an
What's that
old
from
soul, but
83? I
son.
think 83 to 98. Yes,
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, okay.
it's right indeed, it's right indeed. So my goodness, fun question for you. So your fabulous book with the wonderful championing organization wellness coaching triangulation optimally positions leaders, aspiring leaders, and organizations to excel in global multicultural landscapes. If that wonderful book were a food, what would it be and why?
If it was a food,
Yeah, if it were a food, what would it be?
a salad with all the different ingredients in it, and it'll be healthy for you.
There you go. The vegans
I
are
never no, yes, you can put meat on salad now. I could put
happy.
shrimp on it. I could put some chicken. I could put some steak on it. That's why I use salad. I sort of cheated on you there. I never been asked that question, so I just thought what was healthy is something that has some variety to it. So, and some people pick the meat off their salad, right?
Well, I guess the vegans are mad. Like, darn it, he found the loophole. No. You must find a tree and eat it.
That's funny.
Go. It's right indeed. It's right indeed. It's a salad, y'all. Good for you. Good for you. One of those salad pyramids in this case.
Well, no, that's not a pyramid. Some people get that. That's a triangle. It's coaching triangulation. The best way to fix a ship position through triangle navigation, you got to get 3 points that's equal degrees apart there. So that's that triangle. That's how I can fix a ship's position best when I do triangular navigation there. So that's why that picture's there. So I like to clarify that one.
You knew someone was going to make a darn reference to the Illuminati or multi-level marketing. All right,
Oh,
I
you
see
know
what you did
that.
there.
Oh yes, that doesn't sit so well. In fact, I had some people that sort of tried to talk me against it, but I was like, probably late in the process. But yeah, it's just yeah. But if I wrote a novel, I probably would not use a triangle. So it's amazing how we get caught up on these certain terms and concepts. Like now, people are struggling with the concept of empowerment because I think some people take it as if people want to be privileged or what have you. I don't know. I think we're in a world of co-equals, the lead follow model is vanishing now. So I look at it as if just elevating, people to think at a high level. So like I said, some people have issues with that term, empowerment. I don't have to listen to my boss if I'm empowered. No, you have. No, I just think you need to get to know more. I want you to know more. It was my goal to. I always felt that was a little secret I always keep. I don't want to do but so much work. So the more people like me I build and create, then the less I have to do, right? I can do more reading and stuff that I enjoy. Just while they just making stuff happen. So that's why I always felt the need to grow up. Numerous my me. So the more I developed, the better my life was. So, and that's another thing, this Champion Organization Wellness does, if you once you get to the top of that triangle there, once you get true north, then you go back and feed back into this closed loop system there, then we can change position once we get there, the leader and the aspiring leader. So the aspiring leader come back in on the left side of the triangle as the not as the leader. Then he brings someone else along. So that's the model. That's how you sustain this organizational wellness. It's through that closed loop system. That's another way I like to look at why I am the way I am today, because I live in a closed loop system where I filter out, the bad and try to take my lessons in life and grow from them. Similar to the question you asked me earlier, what was some of my lessons? I mean, I could have gave you tons and tons of examples, but the one that pushed me into this doctoral process and, in academia learning was, the way my Navy career sort of ended a little. I'm not going to use prematurely, but it was not, it could have been on different terms.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about indeed. So talking about indeed, all the different terms, y'all's right indeed. Yeah, well, words are magical. Be like, yep. If I'm empowered not to listen to my boss, it's like, yeah, keep thinking that one, buddy. If you become an entrepreneur, your customers become your bosses.
Well,
In a way.
that's true though. Entrepreneurs, it's tough though. I mean, that's an accurate statement, And the world is, I think it was Pete Drucker said, the world's going to be now just everybody going, to aspire to be an entrepreneur. So you have a lot of bosses, got a lot of chiefs, huh? Got to be tough to find Indians in the future, right?
Right, indeed. I have to go to the Indian Ocean.
Oh, think you can handle
Nope.
that?
Oh.
In the Navy, we call it the owl. I steamed through that a few times. Yeah, the Indian Ocean. I like it.
That's good day. Well, we're coming down to the magical question that every guest gets to receive, and that is, if you're to wake up tomorrow and you were 25 again, but you're still in the current year, what advice would you give to yourself?
Oh man, I'm gonna be very practical here. Just be intentional. Be intentional. I say that there's a lot of opportunities that I have a son that's 25 and I talk with him. There's a lot of opportunities out there, given where we are today. Just look across the whole landscape of where the needs and see what fit in and what suits you. Don't go for money. Don't go for any particular prestige. Just do what you're passionate about and just be intentional. The world is replete with opportunities. Just make sure you prepare yourself and be intentional.
Ah, I like it. I like it indeed. Be intentional. Be in touch. That's solid advice. That's right, indeed, because it's true. Because there's a lot of stuff out there that can get you on so many different courses, get you off course, on course, side course.
You're right. It's unlimited, and that's why I say that, and just so many people just don't really, it's interesting, I think it's great times, if you ask me, it really is. It's really great times. I think a lot of on the land that's been put in place, a lot of the framework is there, and kids can make what they want to make of it, as long as they understand what it is they're doing and just don't get too head over heels about their approach on it.
So many tools out there. That's right. If you think a toolbox was big before, it's really big now. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. And the good news is, my man's got a whole bunch of tools in this toolbox, and folks only probably got 3% of what my man has to offer. So for those who need to dive into the other 97% of what the good Dr. Anthony himself has to offer and cop some copies of your magical book, what's the best way for folks to do so?
Yeah, the best way is go to my website, www.sixgearconsulting.com, and it'll point you. It's available on Amazon, Barnes and Nobles, and Apple Books, but all the information is there on the website. It's SIXTH Gear, GAR consulting.com.
You're that right, folks. A man's got to be 6'4" you. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. You'll be ready to rev up to your next level of greatness, y'all, with the good Dr. Anthony himself. He's got you covered like a blanket, y'all. So be sure to cop some copies of his magical book and share it with your friends, family, cat, dog, penguin, maybe even share it with the camel, indeed. Take that mess across the desert, the wonderful Sahara Desert, even if you want. That's right, indeed. Let them know, hey, we got the organization for you. We got the triangulation going on, the good stuff. No upside down pizza slice here, y'all. It's just a triangle.
I appreciate that clarification.
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Well, any parting words before we close up shop?
No, I really appreciate this opportunity. I like your approach here. Your setting here just made it really easy to really get the true message in out there. So I really like that. And thanks for the opportunity to have that platform. As I mentioned earlier, I been in so many formal environments sometimes, you know, good to sit down and have a conversation as while we are actually imbuing people with valuable information. So thanks for that opportunity to get this out to everyone. Hopefully I can add some value and illuminate someone's journey as they endeavor true north.
If you're listening to this, that means you're one cool individual. If you want to be cooler than two cucumbers, share this episode with someone that you think will enjoy it too. And be sure to subscribe and keep being cool.